can't touch me, man. Beautiful, baby.
Zoe Cabin alongside Jeff Siegel, who is bopping away here. If any of you have not heard Jeff Siegel sing, I can assure you, he's actually rather good, and that's his favorite song ever.
I used to be able to sing back in the late 60s when my rock band was.
You were in a band, right? You played the guitar.
I was the lead singer and lead guitarist for a band that played a lot of colleges around here. We played mostly, we didn't have any of our own songs, but we played all the hot songs at the time. Mostly dance music, because that's what they wanted to do, they being our audience, you know. And that was good for about a year, and then that was the end of that.
So never ceases to amaze me. Maybe we should hook you and Bob Baffert up. We'll have a little duo.
Yeah, well, I haven't played the guitar in, like, roughly 50 years.
So Bob's got one back there.
I know, but I don't think I could remember how to hold
it anymore.
It's like
riding a bike, Siegel.
I don't
think so. You can ride a bike, right?
I could do that, but you're back, and that's good, because you were you didn't miss the podcast, but you were gone to New Orleans. It was Mardi Gras, and if there's an opportunity somewhere in this world to party, Zoe is going to find it.
It's a wonderful combination of work and having fun. You know, work hard.
Yeah, but I mean, did you
play harder?
Well, what did you work? I mean, you were there for what did
I
you do?
I went to the backside. I stayed with Brett and Sarah Calhoun. They have a lovely house that actually overlooks the track. So
wow.
Get this, Siegel.
That's nice.
I could sit there with my coffee and watch horses train.
You can do that at San Luis Rey Downs too. If you buy one of those houses on the backstretch, you know, that's not bad either.
It was pretty awesome. So I had a fabulous weekend. Mardi Gras was fun. I got to see a lot of people. I got to see a lot of horses. But meanwhile, going on here at Santa Anita, we got several horses on the comeback trail, Siegel, and they all worked this morning. Game winner worked this morning, 49-1 on a Drayden. He looks fabulous.
We can use him. And we'll talk about the handicap division, the older horse division. I used to call it the handicap division. There are no more handicaps. But we've lost a few halfway around the world. We'll talk about that as well. So we need some fresh blood, some new, you know, some horses that have been away. And Game Winner saw the work. He looks like he's coming back very nicely.
He's coming back well. Bellafina, she worked this morning for trainer Simon Callahan. You know, a lot of people thought that she'd be sold and bred.
Mm-hmm.
Kaleem Shah obviously changing his mind during the November sale and opted to keep Bellafina in training. So she worked. 8 rings on the comeback.
Well,
and he's coming
about
back
him.
Quickly.
Now, did you see the work?
He's good. He's not, you know what, he's not a great workhorse. He's never going to wow you. He's not a terribly big horse. But he's very efficient. He worked in 1:13.3 this morning.
Okay, so he's not that far away. Now, we'll talk about our top 20 later on the podcast here, but I have him number 20.
We have time for a top 20?
I have, well, not the whole top 20, but we'll, you know, but he is number 20. And he's kind of like an out of sight, out of mind type of horse. And yet, if you look at his resume, he's pretty impressive. I mean, his win in the American Pharoah, there's nothing to sneeze about that. That day, he destroyed the Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner, Storm the Court. Then he came back in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, and most people thought he had a very good chance of winning that race, and he went into...
I don't think he was the best that we've seen him.
Well, that was part of it. Maybe he was maybe over the top a little bit, and also that track, very deep. I don't think he liked it. So Bob Baffert gave 8 rings time off. He's bringing him back. I don't know whether he's really on anybody's radar with regards to the Kentucky Derby, but he is going to win some important races this year, and I wouldn't be surprised if Bob maybe looks at the Preakness maybe for him, if not the Derby, but you're telling me that after working 3/4 and 13 and change, 8 rings might not be too far off.
I don't think so. I mean, you never know with Bob where he's going, but he's got a big old handful of horses, all 3-year-olds and all are headed towards Derby preps. All right, let's talk $20 million, and we'll talk Saudi Cup Day. All the horses are on the grounds. They drew this morning $20 million. That race will go off at 12:40 Eastern. You can watch it on FS1. Our own Michelle Yu's over there with Nick Luck right now.
I believe that's 12:40 Eastern.
12:40 Eastern.
That's,
yeah,
9:40.
That's what I said.
Right, that's what you said. I know it's 11 hours between where we are in L.A. and Saudi Arabia.
12:40 Eastern, 9:40
Pacific.
Well,
that's perfect, the perfect time.
You can watch the undercard races on TVG. You can bet them through ExpressBet. You can bet them pretty much everywhere.
Right.
And it looks like they're going to have some really, really Good racing.
No, I have not seen the entries for the undercard. I know that there are a couple of horses.
I've Billy got Batts. A couple of them.
Billy Batts, I know, is running in the Derby for Peter Miller.
I'll read them off
okay.
to you.
Okay, all right.
Post positions were also drawn. This is courtesy of the DRF's Brad Free for right. the Saudi undercard. Race number one is $1 million. This is the Mohammed Youssef Motors Cup led by Deirdre. She's a very, very good filly over there. Okay. Race two is the Turf Sprint, which includes Ghoul and Legends of War for trainer Doug O'Neill.
Right.
Race three is the $2.5 million Longines Turf Handicap with Cross Counter and DXB. Race four is an Arabian. Race five is a $500,000 race for local runners. And race eight is the Saudi Derby, Billy Batts, Rowdy Yates. And race seven is the $1.5 million Saudi Sprint where we get to see little Imperial Hints.
Okay, that's fun.
So
the hope that he runs back
to hope that he's
best,
traveled yeah. well. Obviously, he was scratched okay. out here with the quarter crack.
Right.
And didn't pass the veterinary inspection, but he's over there now. And I'm rooting for Imperial Hint because
well,
he's a cool little horse.
He's like 14.3 or something.
Maybe. Maybe. He's a little right. swayback, too. So yeah. he's not very big.
But now, as far as the draw for the big race, the Saudi Cup, we've got a lot of American interests in that race, a lot of Southern California interests as well. I think everybody drew well enough. I mean, it's a one-turn mile and an eighth, so I don't think the draw is that important. But what I've been reading from Brad Free and the DRF is that racetrack is very sandy, very deep sandy. It makes big sandy look like a paved highway, I think, is what he's trying to say. And I don't know how these horses are going to handle it.
Well, I think McKenzie's going to love the one turn.
No doubt.
We know he loves the one turn. He's drawn right outside of Mucho Gusto. Looks like there'll be speed on the inside with maximum security. The horse that maybe lost the draw would be Tacitus. He draws yeah. post position number two, maximum security, and post position number four. I'm not sure he's going to like that. They're going to have to work out a position. Jose Lascano is the new rider on Tacitus. Jose Ortiz took a tumble on a first timer. And I've got to give props to Jose Ortiz. I was sitting in a local restaurant right outside the fairgrounds with some friends having lunch. And they had the races on. We're watching the race from Gulfstream. And all of a sudden, I see this horse, a first-time starter, trained by Tom Albertrani, rearing up and spinning around. And whoever jock was on him, I didn't know who it was holding on for dear life. Reared up, spun around, reared up, spun around. We're all watching it. And after about five spins, the jock finally flies off. That was Jose Ortiz. Cowboy's up, gets back on him. Kicks his feet out the irons and takes off on his own, rides a race. A couple of races later, his wrists start to hurt, and he's out with a fractured wrist.
Yeah, that's too bad. So he's out for at least a month, I would
think. Could be worse. Could have been worse.
Could be worse. But getting back to the Saudi Cup, now you mentioned Tacitus making his first start since I think he was third in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, if memory serves. Of course, you've got Maximum Security making his first start of the year. He was supposed to run, we all thought he was going to run, in the Pegasus World Cup, but with $20 million being offered, they decided to wait. It'll be interesting to see how he makes his four-year-old debut. We've got a number of other horses, of course, McKenzie and Mucho Gusto from Bob Baffert's barn, who have been training really well. It's a really good race. And, of course, Midnight Bisou's there as well. So
exactly.
How do you think she
Ben
fits
Battle
with,
looks like he's good.
I want to talk to you about, let's talk about Midnight Bisou first, then we'll get into Ben Battle. But this seems like a very ambitious spot. I know $20 million will make it her worthwhile if she even hits the board, but that's a tough spot.
According to the connection, she's never been better. And one person that you can trust in shipping horses a long way like that is Steve Asmussen and Scott Blousy.
One thing I'll say about Midnight Bisou is that, just like McKenzie, I always felt she was better around one turn.
Right.
And so I think if she's doing as well as we've been told, she may have a chance to have a very much of a say in the outcome here, the mare taking on the boys notwithstanding. Now you mentioned Ben Battle. Now I remember Ben Battle because he was, he's been around the world a million times, but he actually ran second. Remember to Winx at Royal Ascot back in the spring or
how about
summer
his dirt form
of 2018? His dirt form looks pretty good. I mean, he's coming off a couple of wins in Dubai, a Group 2 when he beat Gronkowski last time out in early February. So this really is a really, really good race, and it's worthwhile getting up to watch. I mean, you don't have to get up that early if California's 9:40
o'clock. 9:40 Siegel. You can make that.
I can make that. Yeah. And then, of course, noon in the east. So this is an extraordinary race. And the good news is that we're getting together a field that would be worthy of most Breeders' Cups, the classics. But on the other hand, we've lost all these horses halfway around the world. And I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing for North American racing. But on the other hand, you can't blame anybody going halfway around the world when they're offering that kind of money.
And it's a really good betting race as well, because you don't know how McKinsey seems to disappoint more than he runs well. So everything's got to go his way. He gets a good draw, inside to outside. Gold Dream, she's very good indeed. We have Tacitus, Ben Battle, North America. He's got to be 15 right now. Gronkowski, Midnight Bisou, Maximum Security, Mucho Gusto, McKinsey, Cherisobel, Great Scott, Magic One, bless her, and Capessa, and my
if
Jack.
It's a big race, like throwing a party. If there's one, she's going to be there, right?
She's going to be there. She's a party crasher.
Right.
Over.
The thing is, I also was reading Brad Free's story in the DRF, and he mentioned how, in his observations and in conversations he's had with people who know that racetrack, speed is not particularly good there. I don't know why it wouldn't be, but in fact, I read that like half the races are won from the closers, the deep closers. And I was looking at this race and wondering who was going to run with Maximum Security early. And I'm not sure that necessarily is going to be a positive for him if he is the lone speed, because apparently speed doesn't stick there. But if you put Maximum Security on the front end and nobody goes with him, I don't care what racetrack you're running on, he's not coming back. So it'll be interesting to see the strategy involved.
I think you're going to get a good, honest pace. I'm not sure Midnight Bisou will be nearly as far back as she was in the Breeders' Cup, because
that got her beat.
So I think Mike Smith's going to be active with her. Okay. Get her forwardly placed, get her in a good position. There'll be a few horses. Tacitus can be tactical when he wants to, and by watching him train over there, he's a little sharper than I've seen him, because he's not an overly generous workhorse in the morning. I think being a son of Tappet, he needs stimulation, and going to a new spot, I think, is good for him, because he's definitely looking a bit more animated than I've seen him.
Once again, like everybody seems to do, we have ignored Mucho Gusto.
Don't do that.
Right. And why couldn't he be sitting in a guard spot? Now, we know that he challenged Maximum Security when they met in the Haskell, and he was not up to that task quite yet, but he might be a better horse now, and who knows? I wouldn't put it past him.
Well, the time off he had served him as well, because he worked really, really hard at the beginning of last year. And I think towards the tail end, his last couple of races, he needed a bit of time. Bob gave him the time, and he's come back really, really well.
Anyway, that's Saturday, a really, really top race. And, of course, many of these horses will probably run in the Saudi Cup and then head on down to Dubai.
Only a two-hour flight for those horses. So we'll see a lot of them, and it's going to be a really, really good race. Once again, 12:40 Eastern, FS1, or 9:40 Pacific if you're out here on the West Coast.
Definitely watch that. And again, as you mentioned, the good undercard races will be on TVG. Also on Saturday, and let's not lose sight of the fact that there are some important races in the States still.
Absolutely.
Fountain of Youth is the feature. One of 10 stakes races. We haven't seen the draw yet. 10 stakes races on Saturday at Gulfstream Park. I can't wait for that draw. I can't wait to dive in and handicap. You and I will be doing bullet drills, looking at all the key workouts later in the week for the Gulfstream Park program. But they did draw the Fountain of Youth, of course, the key prep race to the Florida Derby. And I was shocked to see that there were 12 that passed the entry box.
It's amazing. I mean, that's a good field, inside to outside. How do they read, Siegel?
Well, the main contenders are Dennis's Moment, who drew lovely. He's a 2-1 morning line favorite. He's number 5. As seen on TV, right alongside number 6, 9-2, that's looking at Lucky Colt, that ran so well on the Macho Man, got beat in photo by Chanted, who was the real loser of the draw. This race is 1 1/16, short run of the clubhouse turn. Chance It drew way on the outside in the 12 hole. Right inside to him, Ita Indian, who's a good colt. He's got number 11. And Shotsky, who won the Remsen, he's number 10. So most of the real main contention drawn way on the outside, exactly not where you want to be, going 1 1/16 at Gulfstream Park. But Dennis's Moment drew the 5. He is 2-1. There's been a lot of talk about Dennis's moment, and I've speculated maybe he's not quite what they think he is, but maybe he is. Maybe he'll fool me. I watched him blow out. He looked okay, just okay. I don't know whether he's not, hasn't grown up, hasn't matured, but I'm really curious to see if the hype is still warranted on Dennis's moment. We will find out on Saturday in the Fountain of Youth. Zoe, what do you think?
I'm waiting to see. Dennis's moment for me was the number one two-year-old last year without question leading into the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. His work, subsequent works have been very good at Gulfstream. The 1-2 back got messed up according to trainer Dale Romans. And I'm really looking forward to watching him run. He's got to make a big jump forward from two-year-old to three-year-old. Can he do it? I don't see why he can't.
Will I take
1-9 on Dennis's moment? No, I'm not going to do that. To fill the 12, anything
right,
can happen.
Exactly.
We've seen that, him
here's
stumbling.
Here's the thing about Dennis's moment. I am not, and I dropped him on my list. I've got him in the top 10 still. But if you look at his form, he won his first start with a great number, 97 Byron number. Won by 19, looked like spectacular bid or somebody. And then he comes back and he's wins the Iroquois nicely, beating Scabbard, and that's just an average race, really, when you think about it. And then, of course, he lost all chance in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. I just don't know whether the hype is warranted. Now, I'm very willing to wait and see, like you, but this makes this race very intriguing, and one of the reasons why I think where you've got 12 horses in here is that I don't think he's the kind of horse that's scaring anybody anymore. Maybe last year he would have. But with Chance at Way on the outside, a very, very good colt, Florida bred, who, if he had drawn better, I might have gambled on him. I'm not sure I'm taking 7-2 on Chance it from the 12 hole. Anyway, that comes up. That's a very important. It's the key real race for three-year-olds this week. And it's, of course, the prep for the Florida Derby. So
85 points, more importantly.
It's very, very important
50 to the winner.
Run well. And I would say this. If Dennis's moment doesn't win this race, then he's got some explaining to do.
Absolutely. All right, Siegel, this week's Triple Crown Top 20. We'll briefly go over it right now, but where can we find it? Well, you have a new webpage,
we
right?
We do. XBTV.com will have this, or has it right now. I'll also upload it to ExpressBet tonight. This is a list of top 20. It can be found on XBTV.com. Just go to my blog. You know, there's a little link on the top of the front page, blogs, and click my blog and you'll see it there. It's got, not only does it have the rankings, but it's got links to video, the workouts, the key races. I've given every horse an assigned weight, like it would be a handicap, to give you an idea of where I rate everybody. And we've talked, you know, some explanations. I got a positives and a concern. So, you know, you get a kind of a full picture. And I've got Authentic back on top number one. I've watched him train. He looks great. He's a big strapping colt by Into Mischief. There are those who believe that by Into Mischief, out of a Mr. Greeley mare, he does not have a right to go a mile and a quarter. If you look at him, I think he will. He makes his next start in the San Felipe. He will be doing that with his stablemate, the Unbeaten. Very, very promising and very good 1,000 words. Zoe, I've got Nadal number two, and I had dropped him to number five. Then I saw him work the other day, and
he looked unbelievable.
I thought he worked great. Now, he's not a pretty mover, and he's more power than he is finesse. He's not the kind of horse you want to get behind horses. He's not the kind of horse you want to hold up right and make one run. But the way he's training, I wouldn't want to be running against him in the Rebel, and that's his next start. I have him number two. Am I out of line there?
No.
Okay. Number three, I have Tiz the Law. And if anybody wants to put Tiz the Law on top based on resume, I would not talk him out of it. I thought his win in the Holy Bull was tremendous. Despite the fact that they grabbed him and choked him back and did everything stupid, and the horse still won, why don't they just let him run, for crying out loud? I hope they don't try to get too cute with Tiz the Law. He's got a tremendous amount of talent. Let him show his abilities. Again, he's bypassing the Holy of the Fountain of Youth. He'll wait for the Florida Derby. I got number four, Maxfield. Now, let me explain why I have Maxfield. This is not a Kentucky Derby top 20. It's a Triple Crown top 20. And Maxfield may not be ready to run on the Kentucky Derby. But he's got to be able to think that he could run in the Preakness. And maybe he will even make the Derby. You look at his form, Zoe. I think he's really, really good.
He looked super working the other day. And he'll come around quickly.
As we mentioned
before, Brendan Walsh, so good at getting these young horses ready, two-minute licking, getting them pretty much so fit before he even works them.
Number five is Charlatan. Now, this is a polarizing.
How good did
selection.
He look yesterday working here?
I loved his maiden win. He earned a 105 buyer number. He did. You didn't have to pretend that you saw something you didn't see. You saw it. Okay. He's a strong, powerful colt. This was his first work back, just 9 days after the work. You could see why this is the kind of colt you'd probably want to kick on with, it because he needs it, you know? He worked a half yesterday in 47-4, and I don't think I've ever seen a 47-4 work look better than he did. And if you're Bob Baffert, what do you do now? Because you're probably not going to get a 9-1 as a 2 to fill here. You've got Nadal already going to the Rebel.
How many times have they split the Rebel?
Well, I think if they were to do that, he would go.
I mean, they split the Smarty Jones. They split the last one.
Yeah.
They split the Risen Star. It seems like they're splitting everything.
I would wonder if Bob would call them up and say, if you split this race, I'll run him, but if you don't, I won't. I mean, that would be a pretty good...
They'd have to get enough.
Didn't they split it last year?
They've split it before.
Yeah.
And they've split the Southwest.
Well, wasn't that Omaha Beach winning one division and... Who won the other? I can't even remember. Improbable was in the other division with whatever. Bottom line is that I think Charlatan, I know that there are going to be doubts as to how far he wants to run. He is so fast and so strong and so powerful. But I don't think Bob can keep this horse off the ground. And he's number 5 on my list. And if he doesn't win the Kentucky Derby, he might win the Preakness, which is why he's on the list. I'll quickly go through the others. Sol Volante, number 6. He had a breeze this morning, did he not?
As usual on the grass.
Yeah.
Good 7-8.
He looked good?
He looks great.
Okay. He is a better horse than people are giving him credit for, because he can run on the dirt, he can run on the turf, he can come from way back, he can win from a stalking position, he can win off slow fractions or fast fractions. Patrick Biancone can train a good horse, and Sol Volante is a very, very good horse. I've got Dennis's Moments, number 7. Until such time as he proves to me that he deserves to be higher, maybe he'll do that on Saturday. 1,000 Words is number 8, undefeated. I think he's not the best in the barn, but I certainly would like to own him. I can tell you that.
I'd love to own him. You know. I thought his race was very, very good. People are knocking it just because he's smart. He just does enough.
He does enough. One thing about him, he's won his 3 races by a grand total, Zoe, of a length and a half.
So that's more than I thought. I thought you were going to say 3 quarters of a length.
No, but on the one end, you have to give him credit for finding that reserve energy when the issue has to be decided in the final 16th of a mile. On the other hand, I'd like to him to blow somebody out one of these days just so I get more, you know, more confidence. His numbers are okay. Not great, but they're okay. We'll see if he can step forward and match strides with Authentic, because Authentic is... He's just raw talent. Yeah, he's the best horse 1,000 Words we'll have ever seen. Mr. Monomoy, number 9. He's just very consistent. Buyer numbers are rising. I liked his Risen Star. He's the kind of horse, though, that has won both two races, and both of his wins have been wire to wire. Does he need the lead, Zoe?
I don't think so. You know, I actually, many thanks to Brad Cox's assistant down there at the fairgrounds. He pulled him out for me so I could get a good look, because I like to see horses in person. He's by Palace Malice, out of the Henny Hughes Drumette. Now, his assistant used to work for Neil Howard and was around this mare an awful lot, Drumette, who was a stakes winner. She was a nice mare, and said he really takes to his mother. He's not an overly big horse. He's well put together. But the fact that he's not overly big begs me to believe that he's a handy horse. And you don't want a massive, big, hulking horse. I mean, you have Nadal, he's massive, big, and hulking. But this is a handy, smaller horse that is perfect for the rigors of the Kentucky Derby Triple Crown Trail. And I really like what I saw from Mr. Monoboy, and he's a cool horse to be around.
All right, so we're looking forward to him. He's, from the first crop of a horse that I love, Palace Malice, because he was so versatile. And then number 10, I have Governor Morris, who was a winner of an overnight race at Tampa Bay. The 88 buyer number is not going to knock your socks off, but I think he was like 3/4 fit probably, and they didn't want a hard race for him. And I think he'll step forward next time for wherever he wants to run. I mean, they got like 3 different options, and I don't think they'll figure what he's going to do until, you know, maybe a week before the race. I've got Chance at number 11, and I won't go into the top 20. You can check it out on the website, but Chance, of course, is in the Florida Derby, the Fountain of Youth, from that terrible post. I wonder if they would consider maybe scratching him and waiting a week for the Tampa Bay Derby. Would you do that?
No, because, you know, a lot of the time what happens at Tampa stays at Tampa. Mm-hmm. He's training down there at Gulfstream Park. He's pointed to this race. I would.
Okay. That's no indication they're thinking about that, but sometimes you can think too much.
Outthink yourself. Exactly. All right, let's kick on and talk about Covfefe. So I'm down in New Orleans this past weekend, fortunate enough to be able to wander into Brad Cox's barn, and it is like murderer's row down there. Mm-hmm. First stall, Monomoy Girl.
Right.
God, she's massive right now. She looked fabulous. Right next to her, British Idiom. You go down a little bit further, you'll come across Arklow, great old gelding.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And then at the end with a lovely window, you came across Covfefe, who looked fantastic. So it was her birthday, and Ellen J. Foxwoods loved this filly. Sent them a little video, put it out on social media. And then I come back and I find she's retired. And I'm like, what gives?
I don't know. And you know, the first thing I thought about was she must have been injured. Everybody seems to, you know, we read the press release. Oh, she's 100% sound, which everybody says, okay. This time I actually believe it, Zoe, because I was thinking about Covfefe, and she's a two-time Eclipse Award winner. Now, let me just say it again. I wish she ran. I mean, I'm a racehorse guy. If she were mine, I'd probably run her because I'm more interested in enjoying the sport and running the horses. But when you have a filly this valuable and she's a two-time Eclipse Award winner, what could she possibly do as a four-year-old that she's already done? And the problem is she's a filly sprinter, which is, let's face it, not the most prestigious division.
Niche.
But where are you going to earn a lot of money if you're running sprints against fillies in the States? There's just not enough much money. So I think it probably makes a little bit more sense than originally I gave it credit for. I mean, there's a lot of pressure when you have a filly like this. And I went back and I was remembering, what would it be like for her to continue on, and what would be the upside? And I said, you know, maybe she's like Rupee Doll. What would Rupee Doll kept running, and was that smart for Rupee Doll?
Was it beneficial to her?
Well, yeah. I mean, she, as a four-year-old, she came out of the, you know, she won the Breeders' Cup. She was a group winner as a three-year-old. And then as a four-year-old, she won the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. And she came back at five, and she won it again. And I was thinking, okay, in 2013, she won that. She won $871,000. And that's nice, but that's what I'm saying is, how much can you win? You know what I'm saying?
It's and, just, you not know, at that the much. End, at the end of the day, yeah. Ellen J. Foxwoods, Jamie Roth, right. and her family, they love their horses. They're not really in it for the money. They're going to keep this filly forever, and she's going to be their broodmare.
Right.
So this came hot on the heels of the tragic breakdown of Taraz, who's also trained by Brad Cox down there at the fairgrounds. And I think they took a step back and looked at their filly. What else has she got to prove? She's
nothing.
A dual Eclipse Award winner. We spoke to Alex Solis, racing manager for Ellen J. Foxwoods, who's also working at Gainsway, where she'll go to be foaled. She's already there. She arrived. And I said, Alex, come on. Off the record or on the record? Is she okay? And he's like, 100% sound. They just weighed up all her options. And we're like, you know what? Let's just retire her. Let's breed her. I think she's going to go to Constitution.
Yeah. Well, I understand it, and I, you know, I'm a big critic of horses being retired too soon, but and more so with the stallions. Although I realize that there's a lot of money being made if you're a top stallion with the stud fees, but in this particular case, as I mentioned, there's not that much purse money for sprinting fillies and mares. Good luck to Covfefe. Let's hope that she can reproduce herself. I mentioned Rupee Doll, who was one of my favorite mares. She ended up winning $2.6 million, 12 wins, and she ran 2011 to 2014. No guarantees, because she hasn't dropped anything that really even remotely resembles her, and they've bred her to tap it and all the best. So just because you're a great race mare doesn't make you a great brood mare, but hopefully Covfefe will be one that can be that, and best of luck to her. And we'll be seeing her foal, which will be born next year, perhaps running 2 years after that.
All right, well, we're almost out of time, but Siegel, let's talk about some passings that we had this week. The passing of trainer Henry Marino, jockey Ray York, and of course, AP Indy. Now, AP Indy was 31 years old. He lived a pretty darn good life at Lane's End Farms. We last went out in October of 92, taking down the Breeders' Cup Classic for Hall of Famer Neil Drysdale, and not so much what he did on the track, it was what he did afterwards more than anything,
for
Siegel.
Sure. He was by far Seattle Slew's most successful son at stud, but he himself
sire of sires.
Pulpit and those kind. I remember AP Indy when he was a two-year-old, Neil Drysdale's barn, and you have to remember that we had horses in the barn at the time because he was training for us, and he trained prized to win the Breeders' Cup for us. So I was by the barn, and at the time I was living with an exercise girl who was just happened to be getting on AP Indy, although she comes home one day and she says, I just got on the best horse I ever got in my life. And I said, now the gambler in me says, great, what's his name? And she said, I don't know. And I said, well, why don't you find out? So she comes back. He says, Neil will never tell me. And I said, well, then ask the groom or something. Maybe right. He'll know. Comes back the next day. It's Indy something. So I said, Indy, like Indianapolis? I don't know, Indy. So figured it out not too long later that it was number one yearling sold in the entire year that year, $2.9 million, AP Indy. And he was a star from the beginning. And then
he got beat on debut and went off the favorite. Was that some of your money, Siegel?
No, it wasn't, because it was Neil Drysdale. And knowing Neil, he wasn't going to crank him up. But I will say this, though. As much as a fan as I was and as close to as I was with AP Indy, even though I never actually had anything to do with him, he got me, though, because in the Belmont Stakes that year, Barry and I imported a horse from France named My Memoirs. And we ran him in the Belmont Stakes. And I'll never forget, because Jerry Bailey was riding this horse, and he starts to move up on the outside. We thought he might be good enough, but we didn't know if he could handle the dirt. So he's moving up on the outside, and here's Bailey sitting with a ton of horse at the quarter pole, and he's moving, and he passes the fourth horse, and he passes the third horse at the eighth pole. He gets in the second, and I'm thinking we're going to win. And then I looked up, and there's Eddie Delahousie at AP Indy. I'm saying, we're never going to go buy that horse.
Eddie never moved.
Never moved, and we ran second. And so it cost me the Belmont, second fastest Belmont of all time, AP Indy, until that time. Faster, of course, was Secretariat. But he was an incredible stallion. He lived to age 31, which is 100 and
amazing
American human years. He took great care of him. I didn't realize that he had been retired or pensioned from stud for the last like 9 years. I had forgotten about that. But anyway, carried on the Seattle Slough line and was a great racehorse and very
He'll
fond
live on.
Memories.
He'll live on.
He will. You mentioned Henry Marino, and I guess you got to know him when you
came here. Oh, Henry, the greatest guy you could ever have wanted. Ride around on his big white pony here. Mm. He'd always have candy in his pocket.
Oh, like, did he ever? Yeah.
Ah,
yeah.
Come here, little girl. Right. You want a candy?
Oh, Henry was so great.
Just a really cool old cowboy. Todd Pletcher came out here for years while he was in school and spent summers with Henry Marino.
Henry was, when I first got hired at Hollywood Park right out of college in 1974, I had to try to meet all the trainers. And of all the guys that I introduced myself, Henry was the nicest, kindest. Whenever you need, just come by. And of course, not too long after that, he trained a fantastic race mare named Tizna, who was a Chilean mare. And he had so many nice horses. Sam, who was a terrific sprinter, a very popular sprinter. Just a really fun guy. Always had a smile on his face. Passed away at age 90. Again, lived a good life. And I know that we'll miss him, because Henry was good people. Ray York also passing away at age 86. I didn't know Ray, but I did when I was coming around the racetrack as a teenager first, and he was riding. And I know that he won the Kentucky Derby back in 1954.
Were you there?
I was not there. I was probably watching it on my television set, yelling and screaming at the jockey at age 3, but I do remember that. But he won with the Determined, a cowbred, and he actually, I didn't remember this, but I was reading the bio that Mike Woolman had wrote, and he actually rode a race in the year 2000 so he could become the only jockey in history to ride 7 decades.
7 decades,
you know?
Yeah.
And from whenever, I remember him as being a very good rider when I was going to the racetrack. He was riding with the shoes and all the great riders, and was certainly a good rider. He also rode a horse that was one of my favorite horses way back in the 60s, a horse named Colorado King, who was a flaxen chestnut from South Africa that set the world record at Hollywood Park with Ray York in the American Handicap. These are things that you just, when you're growing up and you're new to the sport, you remember forever. And I always loved Ray York as a jockey. He always gave you good value. Anyway, he passed away at age 86. So we lost, these things happen in threes. If you're in horse racing sometimes, Ray York, Henry Marino, and the great AP Indy. Hopefully.
All three of them living fantastic long lives.
And that's what you have to celebrate,
absolutely.
Really.
Absolutely. A celebration of life more than death.
Absolutely. So that's what happened last week. Hopefully, we'll have a great week this week, Zoe. We've got great racing on Saturday in Florida. 10 stakes races. We've got, of course, the Saudi Cup. We've got all kinds of good things happening here on our local track at Santa Anita.
We've also got a new wager, Siegel, and we'll promote this right at the end of the podcast. It's called the Golden Hour Double. It's debuting at Santa Anita and Golden Gate Field on Saturday, this coming Saturday, and it's a $5 minimum wager with a low 15% takeout and a guaranteed pool of $50,000. Go to santaanitapark.com and find out more about that. We'll also feature it tomorrow on one of our VODs, but a great new wager, a very low 15% takeout.
I think the Daily Double is kind of a forgotten wager. I mean, you can make money with the
Double.
You absolutely can, and it'll be challenging, but that's the way we like it. And we will actually, as you mentioned, we'll do a video on demand, a little segment on this week's Saturday's first edition of this double, and hopefully we'll help you make some money and pick some winners and enjoy the new wager. I'll try it, that's for sure.
I'll try it. I'll try anything once or twice or three times. Maybe I'll get lucky on the first time.
I think you will.
All right. For Jeff Siegel, I'm Zoe Cabman. Thanks for listening.